Sunday, January 7th, dawned cloudy and cold. Barbara and Mary Cartman were here early. They'd spent Saturday evening turning the little work area right off the carport into a regular White House flower room, making about 18 bouquets with Jewel's help. And this morning, they disposed them, one in each bedroom and the prettiest in the living rooms. Then I went to Mass with Lucy and Pat and the baby and Marie. I declined and went instead to all the bedrooms, checking to see if there were cigarettes and ashtrays and matches and fruit and candy and flowers and an extra blanket and pillow and recent magazines and some good bedside books. We're putting the Prime Minister in the master guest room above us, Mrs. Eshkol in the gay room, Secretary of State in the children's room, Ambassador and Mrs. Harmon in the two carnation rooms, and the three top-ranking Israelis, Mr. Herzog, General Geber, and Mr. Biton, I believe, in the Cedar House, a room for each, and Minister and Mrs. Evron down at the guest house, Shamir and Pater, security and press, respectively, and two other Israelis, and most delightful arrangement of all to me, Walt Rostow and Luke Battle in the old Sam Johnson farmhouse. Now, not many people I would put there. Walt, I feel affectionate toward and sentimental about. Somehow, I like to have him there, and I feel he would not look down on it. I'd given James instructions to build a fire that would welcome them when they came home from the dinner about 10 or 11 o'clock, and to start a fire in their rooms the next morning when he brought in coffee. And there was a steward to take care of any needs and breakfast at both the Cedar House and the guest house. We had a fairly early lunch, after which Lucy and Pat were supposed to leave, but Lyndon simply can't bear to see them go. So I said, move the baby's bed down to my room, and you all can sort of make it your headquarters. Well, then they could go in after they had greeted the Prime Minister and his wife in the late afternoon. While we were at the lunch table, a jet star landed with Secretary Rusk and Walt and Secretary Battle. They'd had a steak aboard, but they came in and had coffee with us, and afterward the Secretary and Lyndon had a session, and I took Walt and Mr. Battle down to their place of residence. I'd gotten the earlier message from Secretary Rush that he certainly wouldn't mind staying there. In Cherokee County, Georgia, where he grew up, it had been a longer walk to the bathroom than the one I had described at the old farmhouse. A little past three, dressed as warmly as I could, in my bright red ensemble by Marquise and an extra sweater, I flew in with Lyndon and the Secretary in the Jet Star to San Antonio. A sizable crowd had braved the bitter cold. There was a platform and benches, a long red carpet and a welcoming line, in which I saw Mayor McAllister, Congressman Gonzalez and Congressman Kazin, and the Reverend McAllister, who had married Linda and Chuck, quite a group of city officials, Dan Quill, the postmaster, and then the great plane rolled up in front of us and we stood at the foot, and down came a short, stocky, craggy-faced Eshkol and his young chipper wife. I remember distinctly when I first met her on the platform for the arrival ceremonies in Washington, and she told me she had been a sergeant in the Army, the first lady who was a sergeant I'd ever met. She's 34 years younger than he is. This she told me a little later. She was very solicitous and tender with him. Lyndon made a brief welcoming speech. Flowers were presented to each of us. The Prime Minister answered. There were a few signs in Israeli. A small but eager crowd surged around him, and there, inevitably, was Jim Novi. And then it was over, and we were off. And then taking the Prime Minister in the Jet Star, and I taking Mrs. Eshkol, Mrs. Harmon, Mrs. Evron, and two or three more of the Israelis in the chopper. Walt had told me that these were very bright ladies, very interested in the economy, the politics, the history of their country, and also of ours. So I was filling in as we went along about the crops were raised in this country, and there in the distance was one of the dams that had been built along the river, furnishing cheap power and flood control. And those little ponds were called tanks, and our rainfall was very low, only 28 inches a year. My whole Central Texas speech. They did seem quite eager and pleased to be there, and were very easy to be with, especially Mrs. Harmon, who is wonderfully adapted to the life of diplomacy. We arrived at the ranch about 4:30. Lyndon already had the Prime Minister out in the car showing him the deer. I took Mrs. Eshkol to her room, and Barbara and Jim Symington helped with the other ladies, and we all arranged to meet in just a few minutes to go for a drive. They had said they'd much rather do that than just sit around and talk. I drove, just the four of us in the car alone, which seemed to impress them. They asked if it took much security to handle such a big place. toured the Martin Ranch, the south part and the north part, and as happened so many times before, they found many points of comparison between our terrain and Israel's. The live oaks reminded them of olive trees. The goats and the sheep were very familiar sights. Interestingly enough, they said they had forbidden raising goats on quite a large part of the land of Israel because they were so hard on it. I asked them about the reforestation of Israel. I've heard so much about it. I think even Lyndon has a forest named after him in Israel, in honor of some speech he made. And I know many great philanthropists do. What sort of trees were they used for a timber crop? No, they were used principally for soil conservation, to keep it all from blowing away. They'd begun by planting eucalyptus. Now mostly they were a species of pine that could take the lack of rain, and some oaks. Delightfully, the next day, one of the gentlemen added another reason for planting forests. To make the land green, to make it good to look at, to think you weren't looking out on a wasteland. I had thought of them as so intensely practical, and this is a poet's reason, but I like it. Before we left, they'd met Lucy and Pat and the baby, who was performing amiably and showing off in a very satisfactory manner. And then, when we started out the door, we said goodbye to them. I told Mrs. Eshcar that they would be leaving shortly. We drove into Johnson City to see the Pernatus Electric Co-op, the trees Linda planted, the hospital. The ladies were especially interested in this and asked lots of questions. And then the housing for old folks. This, too, they were eager to hear about. They said they were just starting enclaves like this in Israel. And, for instance, all the old German Jews wanted to live together because, as they explained, now that they were getting old, they wanted to revert to a lot of the customs and companionship and language that they had known all their lives. It's a marvelously exciting experiment to me to think that you can build a country from people that come from 72 nations and as many languages, bound together only by the thread of religion and some knowledge of the Hebrew language. Of course, we in America are made of people from as many lands, but we've had a couple of centuries to meld together, and they are trying to do it in a couple of decades. Then we went to Lyndon's boyhood home. Jesse met us at the back door, and we went through with many exclamations and eager interest expressed. They were, in fact, delightful guests. Dark overtook us, and we started back for the ranch, with me describing on the way that several things we might do tomorrow. One, go into Austin, see the university, the Capitol and Governor's Mansion, and the site of the Lyndon Johnson Library. I had heard that Mrs. Eshcar was a librarian. She told me, in fact, she was a historian and had just gone into library work to make a living. Or we might go to San Antonio and see one of the old Spanish missions that had been founded in about 1720 and had flourished until around 1800. At this, there was a little ripple of excitement that you know the guest is pleased. But I had to say that the fog that had encased us for the last 6 days returned, and we had been wrapped in it for all except today. We couldn't, in fact, go anywhere. When we got back, lo and behold, there were Lucy and Pat and the baby. They explained laughingly that they had left and gotten over the dam, and Lyndon had called and invited them back. He just said, "Why don't you sleep in your mother's room and she can move in with me?" So that is what we did. And thus, Lynn got to eat his first state dinner. Of course, at 6.5 months, he has been to other state dinners. But this is the first one he ate, not with us, but the same breast of pheasant and vegetables. We had a brief 30 minutes to change for dinner into simple cocktail dresses, and then we met in the big living room, all 21 of us, had a brief drink, and a little past 7:30 went into the dining room, where Mary and Barbara had put 3 round tables with yellow cloths that came to the floor. I had the Prime Minister on my right and Mr. Harmon on my left, and Jim Symington close by for lively conversation. Lyndon had Mrs. Eshcar and Mrs. Harmon, and the Secretary of State and Lucy were at the third table. I'd gone through the kitchen one moment before to see a luscious fruit plate being concocted by Mary, for one of the gentlemen whom we had discovered didn't eat any meat at all. We'd gotten a chef whom Mary knew and could vouch for as a cook of kosher food, and it really was delicious, though I feel sure they couldn't gain any weight on it. A split pea soup, the breast of pheasant, saffron rice, vegetables, and fruit for dessert. The Prime Minister was amiable, the conversation was heavy, and I was glad that Luke Battle was on the other side. He was a great help. Ambassador Harmon was a very interesting guest, so worldly and knowledgeable and smooth, After 9 years in Washington, they are leaving next month. This was, for us, the smallest and most informal visit of a chief of state we've ever had, and for that reason distinctive and quite pleasant to me. I'm sure for the men it must have been heavy work.
Because
of the problems they face in the Middle East, planes, refugees, boundaries, it's so much easier being a woman. I asked the Prime Minister to sign my menu, which he did in both Hebrew and English. There were toasts, and then we went back in the living room for coffee. The gifts were absolutely thrilling. They had brought to me a collection of artifacts, about six, two of them dating 1,000 years before Christ, and one was a long hook, its strange purpose being to scrape off of one's arms or legs the ointment that had been put on. I asked what the purpose of the ointment was. It seems that it was to make the skin soft and sweet-smelling. I'm not quite sure whether it was a substitute for soap and water. A very strange custom, it seems, but looked at down the long slope of history, perhaps no funnier than some of the stuff we daub on our eyes and lips and hair. There was some attractive jewelry made, Mrs. Eshcol told me, but it seemed most unlikely, from polished pebbles found on the beach. They were all shades of pale green and blue, and I had thought they must be some sorts of semi-precious stones. And most delightful of all, there was Noah and the Ark for Patrick Lyndon, a large, probably hand-carved ark with a very droll Noah who has an expression that says, "Why did I ever get into this?" And a lion, tiger, elephant, crocodile, or some such, sticking its head out of the portholes, and other animals two by two ranged across the deck. Quite humorous and amusing. It will have a central place in his nursery. Shortly after dinner, I stood in front of the fireplace. The fire was now a cheery mass of coals, and introduced Jimmy Symington, who played a mixture of Jewish songs and American folk songs for us. But just right, I thought, low-key, personal, warm sort of entertainment that maintained the intimate atmosphere the day had set. And then, just a little past 10, Mrs. Eshcol made a gesture to take her husband up to bed. He's quite elderly, and it was after 11 by the time they were living on. And so, satisfied with the first day of the visit, I went to my room, had a massage, and read myself to sleep. I'd gotten the weather forecast. It was for a bitter cold wave gripping all of Central Texas, ice and sleet, and dangerous weather.